B-Pod Studios.
Welcome to Wrestling Inside the Ropes with James Stewart.
I'm the best. I'm the best in the world. I've been the best ever since day one when I walked into this company, and I've been vilified and hated since that day.
And Mike Sarge Riley.
I don't know if you realize it or not, but you're trespassing on private property. When you walk through here, through these ropes, you're in my yard. Bad things happen in my yard.
Wrestling Inside the Ropes.
The road to WrestleMania continues. We had a 60-minute time limit draw on a world championship match, and we have news and notes on contracts and WrestleMania nuggets to discuss. Each week, you can listen to Wrestling Inside the Ropes on the podcast page of 98.5thesportshub.com and on the 98.5thesportshub app. While you're there, check out all the other original podcasts available from Boston's Home for Sports. Our podcasts are also available at bpodstudios.com and in Apple Podcasts and Google Podcasts. Mike, good day to you. And we need to figure out a way to get a more catchy sing-along style open, but we'll work on that.
Sure. You know what? Maybe post-WrestleMania, when the new official, unofficial year begins for wrestling. What do you say?
We can try it. We just need something more catchy. We need something fun that people, if we ever get to do a live show, people, we can sing along with The Rock.
Mm-hmm. Now we're cooking with guests.
We're smelling what he's cooking. I want to open with the story that WWE is telling right now with Kofi Kingston and his chase for the WWE Championship. And I also love the story that Ring of Honor is telling in Matt Taven's chase for Jay Lethal, for Jay Lethal's fake world championship.
It is fake.
It is a Melvin belt, as we've called it. In both cases, both companies are using a longer style match, a gauntlet match in Kofi's case, and a time limit draw in Taven's case. They're using wrestling, Mike. They're actual in-ring wrestling to get somebody to the next level. And specific to Kofi and the New Day, this is a group that has worked so hard to get over, and they're a tremendous act together. They are over. Listen to the crowd reaction for Kofi and how they do sing along with New Day in their entrance.
Yep.
It goes back to a point we've talked about relating watching our talent grow up before our eyes. At some point, Mike, I'm actually going to learn the English language and get it right.
It's painful
how much I stumble over my words. It's why I'm a producer, really.
It's quite all right.
So WWE has let Kofi's in-ring work do a lot of the talking for him, adding Vince and, let's be honest, the overtones of how he views Kofi Kingston. Mm-hmm. And the next level story of the possibility of New Day quitting, if you saw the extra videos that New Day put out both after SmackDown last night and Kofi, and Big E and Xavier Woods both put out. That's another dimension. I think this is all going to lead to the locker room going on strike until Vince puts Kofi into a match. And that's, again, just a guess. But I do love the fact that WWE is giving us a good, easy storyline to understand with about 2 weeks to go for WrestleMania, and it's for the WWE Championship, this storyline.
Yeah, and it's kind of like the old Vince McMahon and Mr. McMahon character that we saw, especially during the Austin McMahon era. Now, I mean, not obviously as violent or as extreme, because, you know, that was a different time, but it's very similar with that evil persona. I think that they thought that they had something a little more where Vince McMahon could have kind of rode off onto the power of putting Charlotte into the Raw thing, the women's championship match in lieu of Becky Lynch, but they just had him out there that one time. Then they figured, what the heck, let's put him over here with the Kofi angle. And I think that's worked out tremendously. So it is a traditional storyline, as you said, and it's working out good. I mean, you know what? Sometimes the easiest ones are the most basic ones, and that's the best story to put together. You don't have to think too outside the box, and it works on both ends. So he is so over with the crowd when officially he is announced in the main event at WrestleMania which I don't know, Jimmy, maybe it's me being the old-fashioned wrestling fan, but by now I thought he would have been in the main event of WrestleMania, because the way we're going right now, it may not happen until the week going into WrestleMania. There's only two more SmackDowns to go before WrestleMania.
Mike, there's a possibility that Kofi isn't officially in the WWE Championship match until WrestleMania night.
And I could see that too. I could totally see that.
Remember the story, ironically enough, with Daniel Bryan, where he had to beat Triple H, and that's how he got added to the Randy Orton Batista match in New Orleans at WrestleMania 30. If you want to play it out,
yeah,
say Kofi has to beat his New Day teammates to get to that main event spot. I mean, that would be something that would be interesting. Or I mean, he would have to beat Eric Rowan to get to that spot.
Sure.
But, I mean, if Vince really wants to mess with New Day, then it's now the opening match of WrestleMania is New Day in a triple threat match. The winner of that match gets to go on to face Daniel Bryan in what potentially, Mike, could be the last match on the show.
Could be the last match. So essentially, if that's the case, then this WrestleMania is about Kofi Kingston.
Right. And in a scenario where your WWE, you're going to send the fans home with a happy ending.
Correct.
And that is such a good thing, where in past, the last few years, it hasn't been such a happy ending.
No.
I do feel like, though, that Kofi's winning the championship.
Yeah.
And maybe that's just my belief, but it feels like that they're going in that direction. And whether it goes on last or not, we'll see. But I feel like that Kofi's going to win it.
Well, they definitely want you. They're persuading us to think that he's going to win.
Oh, 100%. I'm in for it. I'm here for it.
Yeah, I am too. It's Kofi Mania. And, Jimmy, a t-shirt should be sold right now if they haven't done it yet for Kofi Mania, almost like the man, because that would, I'd buy one. I'd buy one. And I'm sure a lot of other people would too. So hopefully they parlay something into that level there, because he is very over right now. And you know what? The gauntlet, and to your point, to have him be officially announced the night of WrestleMania, maybe a couple of more matches there, like with the New Day, or maybe Triple H steps in, or even, I don't know, you pull Linda out and saying, no, Vince, he's in, or anything like that. That would be a good ending for Kofi Kingston to make everyone happy.
And I want to kind of transition this to Matt Taven and Jay Lethal had a match for the Ring of Honor World Championship, Jay Lethal's fake Melvin belt. That went to a 60-minute time limit draw. Now, was it Omega Okada? No, but it was a really fabulous match from my point of view. They told a story of Taven working on Lethal's arm, Lethal working on Taven's surgically repaired knee. And look, this is a personal bias of mine. I watched this match as if it were Game 7 of the NBA Finals. And I bleep you not, I was an emotional wreck, counting near falls and feeling pain if Taven missed a move or was hit with a finisher. I felt like the crowd got behind Taven in a number of different spots during this match. What surprised me was the finish, and it surprised me on two levels. The first was the 60-minute time limit draw. The second was Taven kicking out of Lethal's finisher for the second time in the match. And after the kick out, there was a slight delay, and then the bell rang for the 60-minute time limit draw.
Okay.
So that I didn't see coming. I saw either a disputed finish, or I saw Taven walking out with the championship, or a Lethal retained and them porking Taven out of being the main event at MSG. But it was a way that the crowd, who I didn't really feel like believed in Matt Taven, that crowd now believes in Matt Taven, because they were getting behind him and there was some Lethal Taven back and forth chance. So essentially, for the Ring of Honor New Japan show at Madison Square Garden, the Ring of Honor Championship match is now a triple threat ladder match. It's Lethal, Marty the Melvin Villain, and Matt Taven, which is awesome, and it'll be worth it to the fans like myself who will be attending that show.
And should Matt Taven be walking into Madison Square Garden as the Ring of Honor champion? The answer is yes, he's not. So it's going to make it even more sweet when he does win the Ring of Honor Championship at Madison Square Garden on April 6th, right? April 6th?
That sounds right.
Yes, it does. April 6th. I got it. Yeah, because it's Saturday. So there you go. And great storyline. Never been there. Ring of Honor. Madison Square Garden. Taking over the arena where we know the whole background, WWE's history there. And I just don't like... I it bothers me with a 60-minute draw. That bothers me when you have all of these... Everyone, whoever it is, if you have a one-on-one, if you have a triple threat, if you have a tag team match, a fatal four-way, I don't care. I have a problem with that when it goes to a draw after 60 minutes. You have all these guys who invest a total amount of time. They give it their all. You have the fans get behind them. And in my opinion, that is a slap in the face to obviously Matt Taven and Lethal. Why am I blanking here? Help me out.
Jay Lethal?
Jay Lethal. Thank you. Jay Lethal and Matt Taven. That is a slap in the face to them. You need to have a winner on that spectrum.
So overall, you're not for a 60-minute time limit draw.
No.
You need a win and a loss.
I want a win or a loss. One or the other. That's it.
Would a double pin have sufficed? Mike, the answer is no. If you don't like 60-minute time on the draws, you don't like double pins.
I had to think about it. And I'm like, yeah, definitely not.
We've only got so much time here.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, no, no.
So overall, do you like longer matches?
If it's maybe 3 or 4 matches on the card, no problem. But if it's going to be one of about 12, say 13, no.
So for me, in the right spot, I think longer matches can help performers. I think it definitely helped Kofi. I think it helped Matt Taven. And I think especially it helped Seth Rollins last year with the Raw Gauntlet match. You know, for me, two of my favorite 60-minute matches come from Ring of Honor, and this is the CM Punk Samoa Joe series. Mm-hmm. And what that did was it put them both on the map as legitimate main eventers because... I thought they were main eventers at the time, but the 60-minute match, the draw, the Iron Man match, things of that nature are just so rare now. Yep. And so WWE has kind of masked all of this in doing gauntlet matches because they did a 30-minute Iron Man match last summer and the Pittsburgh crowd hated it, even though they shouldn't have hated it because they didn't like it, right?
Yeah. It didn't work.
So what WWE has done is, and this was their thinking when creating the Royal Rumble match and having Ric Flair go coast to coast in the Royal Rumble matches, gauntlet matches, and the Royal Rumble. The idea is they are new matches at different intervals.
Yeah.
So every 90 seconds, it goes from a one-on-one match to a three-person match, and then a four-person match, and then one person gets eliminated, and it's a three-person match again. So right. You're getting a new match at different intervals. In the case of the gauntlet match, over the course of an hour, you are getting Kofi against what ended up being 6 different people.
Yep.
And exactly. I think in the way that the WWE does it, as opposed to the way that Ring of Honor did it, same idea, same concept, just different ways of executing, featuring one performer for an extended period of time. And again, I go back to it was wrestling that helped them. It was the thing that happened in that little square circle with the ropes.
I think obviously when people think about the Iron Man match, when you hear that word, what's the number one Iron Man match that comes to your head? What is it?
An Iron Man match that I hated, which was Bret Hart versus Shawn Michaels.
Agreed. I did not like that match, but that's the first one that comes to your mind because of the buildup and the execution of the two superstars, two of the biggest ones at the time, with the push there for Shawn Michaels to make him a face, which he did become more of the baby face there after Bret Hart did leave. My personal favorite, though, this is a rather young one, though. My personal favorite for the Iron Man match was actually the Iron Woman match between Bayley and Sasha Banks at the NXT TakeOver. I just thought, wow. And it was NXT TakeOver Respect, right?
Yep.
First ever Iron Woman match. And one of the greatest matches I've ever seen because this was the foundation for the future of Bayley and Sasha Banks. And yes, it was only 30 minutes, but it was just awesome. Like what you saw there, it was a great all-out performance. And again, that's where I think if you can lessen the time, less is more. That's why I appreciate the 30 over the 60. That was my favorite one of all time. Also, a very underappreciated one, in my opinion, Judgment Day 2000, Triple H versus The Rock, where The Undertaker came back as the American Badass, if you recall. So I just thought, again, that's a 60-minute one, more drama added to it with the addition of The Undertaker. But you're right. I have a problem with a 60-minute one. It's good for the performers, but it's not my cup of tea all the time.
And that's a fair point, especially from – so I was cultured in the WWE universe. I had to venture out to understand more why the longer match. You're a WWE cultured person as well.
Yes.
So I totally get that.
Yep.
Totally 100% get that.
And I'll say this, Jimmy. I will say this. So I've never sat through an Iron Man match in the flesh. Have you? Have you sat through –
I feel like I was at Bret Hart versus Ric Flair at the Boston Garden, but okay. I don't have a clear enough memory to definitively say yes.
Okay, so I mean, I'm very curious for people that have, how is the atmosphere? I want to know. And you know what? I probably should try that at some point. Maybe I'll get it at some point down the line here. But I never have been to one. Watching it on TV, I mean, it's, you know, it's not my favorite. But if you have two high-end performers like Matt Taven in there, like Kofi Kingston, like someone who I'm invested in, obviously I'm going to watch. But Kofi Kingston and Daniel Bryan, if you put those two in the ring together for an Ironman match, I'm all in.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Kurt Angle announced that his farewell match is going to be at WrestleMania in New York this year. His opponent? No, it wasn't John Cena. It wasn't Roman Reigns. It wasn't The Undertaker. It wasn't Samoa Joe. It was Baron Corbin. And this seemed to anger the crowd in Chicago. Mm-hmm. And it angered the internet, which they acknowledged on TV, which I was surprised at. I was not thrilled with this announcement. At the time, and I, of course, thought, oh, well, this has to be a rib on Kurt Angle, right? Huh. And then I watched him against Chad Gable, and now I have an understanding of why it's Baron Corbin.
Why?
Kurt Angle can't hang with any of these main eventers.
Well,
he can't hang with Cena. He can't hang with Roman. He can't hang with Samoa Joe.
Oh.
He can't hang with them. He couldn't. I hate talking like this. I hate publicly talking like this. Okay. But watch how Kurt Angle took certain moves and executed certain moves in that match. He didn't have it. Angle needs to find the salad bar. I mean, let's be real about it. He should have trained better for what was going to be his farewell match.
Yeah,
well, and also, he couldn't take moves well, and he couldn't execute moves well. So WWE puts Kurt Angle with Baron Corbin. Storyline logic is there. But this is going to be a short match. Either Kurt Angle smokes him or Corbin smokes him and gets more heat.
Which actually, for storyline purposes, that would be better for Baron Corbin, because Kurt Angle is going to walk away unless you put him back in the GM position. And then, you know, he could essentially screw Baron Corbin down the line. But I think it makes solid sense to have Baron Corbin beat Kurt Angle for storyline purposes. I'm the guy who retired Kurt Angle and so forth. That's what would make the most sense. You know, going to Kurt Angle's performance, though, in the ring, Jimmy, really, not that if you didn't notice it before, but you could really, really pick up on it last year, WrestleMania, in that mixed tag match with Ronda Rousey. Even with Triple H, or obviously Triple H had to do majority of the work there with Kurt Angle, and you're right, couldn't really hang with him too much. It's kind of stiff.
I thought Kurt Angle was better in New Orleans. He definitely looked better in New Orleans.
You can tell he's still stiff.
But yeah, I mean, he's gone through neck surgery and he's 50 now?
He shouldn't be in there. He should not be in the ring.
But he just, he doesn't have it anymore. And that's, no. that's disappointing to me.
Yeah. It's kind of like, you know what? As much as I love The Undertaker, that was really painful to see him against Roman Reigns 2 years ago. Because it was like, oh, God. Yeah, and you're right. Kurt Angle is officially 50 years old. That was a painful match. And it's almost of the same sentiment here to see Kurt Angle not do that in this scenario here. Here's a guy that you look up to as a great performer. And it's like, you just got to know when to throw in the towel.
I mean, right now, WrestleMania has 10 matches. It's going to be a really long show. So Kurt Angle versus Baron Corbin should be the shortest one of the bunch.
It's probably going to be like... maybe second to last.
No, I don't, I don't think it'll be second to last.
It might be third to last. If Angle loses, definitely. It'll be later in the show.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Our friend Justin Barrasso over at Sports Illustrated had a few notes in his column this week. First, Ronda Rousey's post-WrestleMania dates with WWE are still undecided. All of the reports that the 32-year-old Rousey wants to leave WWE and start a family with her husband, who made his Raw debut, are accurate. But the question still up in the air is how long Rousey will stay with the company. WWE and Rousey remain on positive terms, and the potential always remains for her to return and finally set up a program between the dueling four horsewomen groups. Mike, what do you make of this?
I don't know. I mean, with Ronda Rousey taking off and then your dueling four horsewomen groups, I don't know. I mean, I could see the whole... Now, when is the earliest we'd see the four horsewomen groups? When is the earliest we're saying?
It feels... I would say Survivor Series, but maybe SummerSlam.
See, that's what I would say. The SummerSlam carries you right into the summer, carries over your storyline, bridges you right there. However, Survivor Series would make sense to see the return of Ronda Rousey then if she were to take time off after WrestleMania, right?
Right.
So, I mean, that you're good about... 6 months away.
And it gives WWE time to introduce Shayna Baszler to the bigger audience. And I don't even remember the other two names. It doesn't matter. Nobody else does either.
Yeah. So it's just like, I think it'd be a cool concept. Totally would. But again, we're on this mystery here as to what is going to happen. Like, I think, you and I have talked about this, that we think Charlotte's going to win, maybe, or Becky. I'm flipping a coin every day. I'm not joking. I'm dead serious. I'm flipping a coin every day who's going to win. So they have a lot to decide here, whoever has the title around them at that time, because you could really carry over the whole one-on-one scenario of Becky Charlotte into the summer and have this stable scenario into the Survivor Series.
And I'll give you and WWE a free booking idea. Mm-hmm. Ronda Rousey retains at WrestleMania. And she beats Charlotte Flair. Thus, Becky can complain that she was never beaten. So they schedule Ronda versus Becky for Money in the Bank in May. Mm. During that match, Charlotte, who won the Money in the Bank briefcase earlier in the night, cashes in, beats Ronda. And that way you're protecting Ronda and you're giving her her first loss kind of on a fluke. And Ronda goes away, and you have Charlotte versus Becky, and you have Becky still chasing for the Raw Women's Championship now. And then so, Ronda comes back at SummerSlam, and then you can do Ronda challenging Becky, or you know, you can try the three-way match again.
Yeah, well, I mean, because we know that is the first pay-per-view after, well, actually second, technically, because of Saudi Arabia.
Saudi Arabia, yep.
Yeah, but that would totally, that would be a good little one there. I don't know. I think Ronda's out of it right now. I really do. I don't think she's going to retain. I could see it happening, but I don't think it's going to happen. So
the, and the reason I say that is because it's a finish that nobody expects. We all think that Ronda's losing the title. Well,
and that's why WWE, they can play with their mind like that. And if that's the case, the only way I'd go on that is if that match is like third to last. If it's the last match of the night,
Becky's got to win.
Or Charlotte. Because they're going to go with this trend here, disappoint you. Like, not disappoint you, but not make you super happy like they have the last 2.5, 3 years straight.
Well, I mean, if Kofi goes on second to last and Kofi wins and then the main event comes out and it's Becky, Charlotte, and Ronda, and Charlotte wins, do you leave happy or do you leave upset?
I mean, I'm fine with it. I'll be happy as a clam, but I think the majority would be not be happy. She's a heel.
Yeah, and I think that that audience, if Becky goes on last, Becky, in their mind, is winning. And that's why I think if you're lining it up, right, if you're lining up all the matches for Mania and you're looking at it from the perspective of we can't have all the good guys and gals win, so you need some villains winning. Is Brock retaining?
See, that's where I could see him retain.
So Brock might be the one villain who retains. But outside of that, Brian, we think, is losing.
Yeah.
We think Ronda is losing. Although, you know, Charlotte as a winner might be in play.
Mm-hmm.
And what am I missing?
Well, Becky.
So I'm talking about villains at the top of the card winning or losing.
You know what I thought about the other day? Like, you know, you see Ronda Rousey and you see Charlotte here on Raw. And this is it's just really fascinating. And not that pro wrestling is not fascinating, but this has become a fascinating storyline with what they can do. And it's played with my mind. It's really psychological at this point. But I wouldn't be surprised. I thought of this. Like, what if you have Charlotte and Ronda team up together and form a super faction, and then they go up against Becky, and then whoever is the champ there, Charlotte or Ronda, they're on the same team more or less, and then you could go after the tag team titles, and then Becky has to take down the top two dogs in the mountain and make it very difficult for her. Maybe she does eventually. It's just like Charlotte is that dark horse where we don't know what's going to happen. So I could totally see her siding with Ronda, Ronda getting Charlotte at her aid, and then both kind of utilizing it as a handicap match.
In your scenario, I would say that Charlotte is using Ronda to get what she wants, and that's the title.
And someone turns on him eventually. One of them
right. Charlotte would turn on Ronda. And,
yeah.
You know, because one of the issues might be with Ronda is that she's playing the bad girl so well that she's going to turn herself back into a good girl, a good
true.
Woman.
Or you could just keep her as the bad girl and turn herself on Charlotte, and then you make Charlotte a face again and just keep Ronda the ultimate heel. She's probably the hottest heel going right now.
Yeah, it definitely feels like that Ronda, in stepping up her game, has made herself the number one villain right now.
That's great.
And Charlotte seems like a secondary part of this, seems like the third wheel in this match, which I think fans for a long time have thought, and now WWE is actually playing too.
Right.
And so it might lean more that Charlotte's going to steal a victory in this one.
Yeah, it's just a lot of confusion, and it's very, very interesting. I'm fascinated. I cannot wait for April 7th to see where they booked this match and obviously the result of it.
So the second piece of news from Justin's column in Sports Illustrated today, he says that The Undertaker still has a WWE contract, and he writes, a WrestleMania appearance, quote, is highly likely. Justin's idea is have The Undertaker cost Brock Lesnar his Universal Championship, giving Seth Rollins a much-needed storyline edge. There's also the potential for a payoff between Brock Lesnar and Undertaker for the May 3rd Saudi Arabia show. So the Prince might be throwing his money around because he couldn't get The Rock, and so he wants to see Brock Lesnar versus The Undertaker. And it's worth mentioning here that the Prince paid $53 million to WWE last year. So,
oh my gosh.
If the Prince wants a match, the Prince is getting a match.
Wow. I'll even work for the Prince, no problem. Holy cow.
He doesn't want your services right now, Mike.
Well, I'll do anything. That's unbelievable. Well, let's not go too far. But anyways, I just think that's incredible. But do you want to see, again, if the money's thrown out there, they're going to do it. But as a fan, would you be invested in Undertaker Brock Lesnar?
No. No, not at all. But if but Saudi Arabia, yeah.
Yeah, then they're going to get it.
This is the price of Vince McMahon doing business, is $53 million last year, Mike, for two shows.
I can't believe that. That's really incredible. Really amazing. I like Barrasso's, where he's going here with the Undertaker interfering, costing Lesnar the match, and then, you know, you have that there for the Saudi Arabia thing to pay it off. I also saw the rumors too that, you know, he'd like to fight Finn Balor, if not this year, maybe next year. But again, if you wait another year, you're more or less, that's, you know, he's another year older. So obviously Finn Balor is going to have to do the majority of the work there. Not that we didn't know that. I just think that I could see that happening with the Lesnar scenario that he presents. Do I like it? No. Hate it. If you're going to have The Undertaker at WrestleMania, you either have him in a match or you have him get on the microphone and say, thank you, I'm done. It's one or the other.
Well, didn't Undertaker leave his gear in the ring in Orlando?
He never told us so.
No. And I understand. And this is why the wording of the Kurt Angle thing is interesting, because it's a farewell match. And at WrestleMania 3, Roddy Piper had his farewell match and they talked up retirement and this, that, and the other thing. And he came back for WrestleMania 5, did the bit with Brother Love, and then had a match with Bad News Brown. And I think he wrestled the WrestleMania in Detroit in that match against Chris Jericho. It was him, Steamboat, and Snuka, and they took on Chris Jericho. So, I mean, you can do farewell matches, retirement matches, and they all just come back in the end. So it really doesn't make a whole lot of difference. You know, unless you're medically disqualified, that's the only way that you actually have a retirement match.
But the only thing, I just look at it here, with the Taker in that scenario, I think he's just held in high regard with Vince McMahon. It's his favorite character he ever created. So that's why I'm saying you either get the match or you have that official farewell on the microphone saying, I'm done. And this is what Vince is going to want you to say when you go out there, because there is legitimate, you know, he's not happy about him doing that StarCast show in May. We know that. We've talked about that. And I just think that he's going to say, you got to go out there and say, this is it, I'm done. And then we'll take a little time off from each other.
And Undertaker is one of Vince McMahon's longtime generals, too.
Yeah.
You know, Vince lost a general in Chris Jericho. Undertaker doing StarCast, you know, limited schedule, things of that sort.
Yeah, there's a lot of pieces in there.
There's a lot of them. There's a lot of layers to who he can trust in the room and things of that nature. Somebody who we know is going to be in the WWE locker room. We don't know for how long, but AJ Styles put out a tweet this week of his new dog and also his new contract. Mm. And it's something that I had started to question around December, was AJ Styles and his contract status, and he has a new one. So good for AJ Styles. Obviously, I think it's a good move for WWE to get AJ under a new contract, not getting to a bidding war. And I think AJ wanted to stay with WWE, and I think they kind of worked out his schedule. So good for AJ.
Good for AJ. I was told as recently as 2 weeks ago that he was 90% in on the WWE. And it all did, you know, come to the total there of him re-signing. And if it's going to be on his terms, he deserves that, Jimmy. He's been a company guy the last 3 years. He's been the face of SmackDown for the last 3 years, too. That's the gimme. He carried the championship. He's one of the best performers I've ever seen in the ring. So I love that decision for AJ to resign with WWE.
I wonder where my follow-up to this is, where does AJ Styles go since he's dominated SmackDown? And my guess is he loses to Randy Orton at WrestleMania, and during the Superstar Shakeup, he ends up on Raw. And if Seth Rollins wins the Universal Championship, it's Seth Rollins versus AJ Styles for that championship for the balance of the summer, or they end up rebuilding AJ on Raw, and it's them again, it's Seth versus AJ for SummerSlam or something to that effect. But
and that's a dream match. That is a dream match. I would love that. I've said that for a while with the shakeup here coming too. I think that'd be a brilliant move to put AJ on Raw.
And let's hope that the fans like it too, because
yeah.
Who's the villain? Who's the good guy? Who's the bad guy?
See, I could see AJ being the heel.
So I could too.
Yeah.
But I would tell you that Seth Rollins plays the villain very well.
He does. He does.
But
I think of the better heel it is Seth Rollins. But I could see AJ though. Like
yeah,
you said.
I would like to see AJ and Gallows and Anderson do something on Raw and make them, you know, the bad guy faction on Raw. I think that would make a lot of sense. And,
awesome.
Raw needs tag teams. Oh, does Raw need tag teams?
They do. And Gallows and Anderson, their contract is coming up this fall, so a little more incentive there if they do resign.
I think that they're happy where they're at.
Okay.
Interesting. I think that don't believe everything you read on the internet.
Yep.
And it wouldn't shock. No, I don't want to say that. I'm going to hold back on that one.
Yeah, leave it at that.
I want to close with Mike. It's WrestleMania season, and I asked on last week's episode, I want your top five WrestleMania matches, your top five favorite WrestleMania matches, just to be clear. I want the list, and then I want you to detail why your number one is your number one. Go.
Okay, here we go. Why don't we go? We'll start with this one here. I'm going to go WrestleMania 25, The Undertaker versus Shawn Michaels. I'm not going to go too much detail. Like I said, I'll wait for number one. Number four. Now, this is because I was there, but really enjoyed the match, and I'll just leave it at that. Triple threat for the Women's Championship. Sasha Banks, Becky Lynch, Charlotte Flair, WrestleMania 32. Then, also I was there, WrestleMania 14, Stone Cold Steve Austin versus Shawn Michaels for the WWF Championship. My second favorite, Icon versus Icon, The Rock versus Hulk Hogan, WrestleMania 18. And my favorite WrestleMania match of all time, WrestleMania 10, the ladder match, Shawn Michaels, Razor Ramon for the Intercontinental title at Madison Square Garden. And as we are taping today, 25 years ago today.
Why is that your favorite WrestleMania match, Mike?
There we go. I know that's what you wanted. You're right. So it's just like...
Thank you.
Yeah.
You got this assignment a week ago. Go.
Yes. No, I get it. Okay. So anyways, that was a time where it was post Hulk Hogan. Okay. The WWF was in that hangover. Vince was in that steroid scandal that previous fall there. Survivor Series 93 was at the Boston Garden. I was heavily invested in that pay-per-view because it was here in Boston. You were there, Jimmy, right? You were there for that. I was heavily invested in it as a third grader. And, you know, I remember the whole storyline where Shawn returned to take Jerry Lawler's spot and he still kept his Intercontinental title. But Razor Ramon had the Intercontinental title. So you had two IC champs. They built it up, brought it into the post-Royal Rumble, and then they had the first ever, quote-unquote, ladder match, even though there were some in-house shows and so forth. But this was the first ever one. And just the mystique there, Madison Square Garden, the build-up, 10 years in the making, history there for the grandest stage of them all. It made me really, not that I didn't, you know, understand of what went into the performance of these guys, but it really made me appreciate Shawn Michaels. And that's why I have said over time that he's the greatest in-ring performer I've ever seen. You know, I've ever seen Shawn Michaels, Razor Ramon, Scott Hall put on an amazing performance in that match, too. So much suspense. There was back-and-forth action. You were on the edge of your seat the whole time. If you watch it again, it's my favorite WrestleMania match of all time. WrestleMania 10, Shawn Michaels, Razor Ramon, ladder match.
So my top five favorite WrestleMania matches, Charlotte versus Asuka. at WrestleMania in New Orleans. CM Punk versus Chris Jericho at WrestleMania 28 in Miami. Chris Benoit versus Triple H versus Shawn Michaels from WrestleMania 20. And Steve Austin versus Bret Hart from WrestleMania 13. And my number one match is Steve Austin versus The Rock from WrestleMania 17. Now, it's my favorite match today. You could ask me the same question tomorrow and I might give you a different answer. But what I loved about this match and what made it my favorite match was the story of Austin and his drive and his obsession to be the WWE champion again. At the time, it was the WWF championship.
Yep.
And for me, that's what pro wrestling and that's what pro sports are really all about.
Right.
And the storytelling of Austin telling The Rock to his face in the promos leading up to this, "Rock, I need this match more than anything else." And then the hot start of the match, and then during the match, the story of Austin doing whatever it takes to regain the WWF championship, even teaming with Vince McMahon to try to get his WWF championship. Now, that idea wasn't great, but the story of it made complete sense. If Austin's obsession is with the championship, he's going to sacrifice all that he worked against McMahon for to have McMahon help him with the championship, because Austin is coming back from injury and he feels like at this stage in his career, he needs everything on his side to get what the purpose is and what the goal is and what his goal in pro wrestling is. And that is the WWF championship. So that's why Rock versus Austin from WrestleMania 17 is my favorite WrestleMania match of all time. But again, that's my answer today. You could ask me the question tomorrow, and I might give you a different answer.
God, I was so invested in that main event too, Jimmy, and just the shock when he and Vince McMahon teamed up there at the end. And I hated that, how he and Triple H teamed up, that top faction there. And it was. And Austin has said it over time that he hated being a heel.
No, he liked the idea of being a heel.
He didn't like how it executed.
He didn't listen to the crowd that night and has said that he should have called an audible, stunned Vince, and made them change everything going forward.
Yeah. I don't know. It just, it made me sick. It made me very bitter. I remember Raw was in Boston the week after, and it was like, I can't even root for Austin anymore. I love him.
That was when Triple H and Steve Austin beat up the Hardy Boys and Lita.
Correct.
And they became the two-man power trip, which they ended up with. I think they ended up ultimately with all four championships. Hunter was the Intercontinental, and then they won the tag team titles from, I think, Kane and Undertaker.
Sounds right.
And eventually.
And that, of course, began the whole invasion storyline that summer, and that was the loudest pop I ever had in my life at the Providence Civic Center when Austin for Team WWF came back that Monday night before Invasion. Then, of course, he turned on him again, but that's what happened there. And it just, I hated it after that whole thing, WrestleMania 17. He should have gone off as a champion. You're right, he should call the audible. Hated him as a heel. Not
and,
a fan.
And the add to that is Houston was kind of Austin's home turf.
Yeah, it was terrible.
And the crowd cheered when he won, and he wanted to be a villain so bad, and he thought he wanted to be ahead of the curve.
Yeah.
And they weren't ready to see Austin with McMahon.
No.
And they weren't ready to boost Steve Austin.
Don't do it at WrestleMania.
And some would point, though, Mike, that might have been the turn, that might have been the downturn for WWE.
I would,
because they spent the whole summer trying to advance Steve Austin as a bad guy.
Couldn't do it. 6 months of waste. Awful. Then you only had another year and a half out of him, because WrestleMania 18, that was a terrible setup there with he and Scott Hall. And then, it was a bittersweet one there. WrestleMania 19 with he and The Rock. It was like, oh, no, that's it. You just knew that was it. And 2 years, kind of a waste, unfortunately.
And there were some injuries, and he walked out. And
yeah, there was a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff. Yeah,
there was a lot of stuff.
It was ugly. So,
two notes before we actually wrap up. One is Dolph Ziggler at the Kowloon this Sunday, 6 o'clock, 781-484-6002. My sources indicate to me that there aren't many tickets remaining for this.
No,
so if you want to get tickets, call starting at noontime on Thursday. Noon to 10 p.m. is the box office hours. They are old school. They don't charge you stupid service fees.
Also, VIP, very limited. Very limited VIP.
So call, talk to a real person, and you won't get charged $20 from a website.
There you go.
And the other thing is, I believe, actually, I will let you do it. Your sources indicate that there is something coming to America's most beloved ballpark.
Sure. For what the Red Sox fans tell you, it's going to be WWE night in September. It's going to be the first Tuesday of September. Unknown as to who is going to be in attendance, who's going to be thrown out the first pitch, what particular item be handed out, but you can book that the first Tuesday of September, WWE night at Fenway Park. In fact, I can give you the actual night right here, because last year Kofi Kingston was there Tuesday, September the 3rd, when the Red Sox take on the Minnesota Twins.
And so the year before that, it was Natalia, and she at the time was the SmackDown Women's Champion.
True. Dan Roach got a picture with her too, by the way. Shameless plug for him.
I love Dan Roach.
He's the best. Great guy.
So, Mike, next week we'll have Raw. We'll be live at the TD Garden for Raw. We'll have SmackDown. We continue the road to WrestleMania. In 2 weeks, Joe Murray will make his return to Wrestling Inside the Ropes. And
yeah,
he
Joe.
Will have prop bets for WrestleMania.
Oh, look at that. That's going to be pretty darn cool.
Each week, you can listen to Wrestling Inside the Ropes on the podcast page of 985thesportshub.com and on the 985 The Sports Hub app. While you're there, check out all the other original podcasts available from Boston's Home for Sports. Our podcasts are also available at bpodstudios.com and in Apple Podcasts and Google Podcasts. For Mike Riley at Sarge985, the show's Twitter account is at WrestleCast985. You can follow me on Twitter at IamJamesStewart. And hopefully, we will see you guys at Kowloon on Sunday, or we will see you at TD Garden on Monday night for Raw.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.